Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. Today, we are reacting to the budget. This is the first budget statement in proper for recent Chancellor Jeremy Hunt. And we are essentially going through the measures together this afternoon. So I'm here with James and Ed from ACS and essentially trying to work out if there's much in there at all for all of us. I mean, previous budget statements have been defined by what is in them or what's not in them. What would you say this one is?
This is about what's not in it, isn't it, from our point of view? We were really hoping for, pressing very hard for more support on energy bill support for businesses, and specifically our members, specifically those members of ours who are currently suffering with really high energy bills because they had to renew last year. And unfortunately, that sort of targeted help was not there. So I'm sure we'll unpack that a bit more, but that's the main headline. As I say, we're sort of waiting. We're listening to all Jeremy Hunt's E's and wondering if energy might be the fifth E, or whether there might be it might be incorporated on the other ones. But yeah, from a business point of view, unfortunately, the cupboard was bare.
Yeah, well, one of these was everywhere. It wasn't everyone. Well, everyone except for businesses, really.
Yeah, it almost got the whole thing. Everyone except energy or whatever, something like that. But yeah. But everything except energy.
So let's get into the energy support or lack of in a bit more detail. So, Ed, you've been working through a lot of the detail of what the government has announced, what they announced at the start of the year. What is coming? Because there is something coming from April, right?
Yes, so the government originally announced what the scheme that is currently in place, the Energy Bill Relief Scheme, which gave a lot of support to businesses with reducing what was a huge increase in their wholesale costs. At the beginning of the year, they've announced a new scheme, which is an Energy Bill Discount Scheme, which essentially gives a discount on the wholesale energy price over a certain threshold. But that's a very small amount. It's actually around about 2 pence per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. So if you, as a convenience store, have got a bill of, say, 75p per kilowatt hour, you're getting two pence off that from April. That is a lot less than the existing support that you're getting. So the government have created a cliff edge. And their argument for doing that is obviously they need to protect public finances, but obviously we're making the case that they need to target that support at the businesses particularly that negotiated their energy contracts in the second half of last year. And unfortunately today, we haven't seen anything from the Chancellor.
Yeah, and we've been very vocal on this. We've been doing lots of media work. James, you've been doing lots of media work over the last week. BBC Breakfast, lots of BBC radio stations, LBC, Times Radio, GB News, talking about this issue, along with retailers as well. Ben Simon's been giving up a lot of time. He's going to be particularly affected. We actually have a clip from Ben just explaining his situation, so I'll just play that for you now.
Okay, so if we take this story, Bolton and Water, as an example, with our contract that ended in September of 2022, we had been paying £2,000 per month in electricity charges. From April, we are faced with a monthly cost of £11,000 per month for our electric. Quite clearly, this store will operate at a loss.
So that's Ben's story there, and his will not be the only one. We've estimated there are almost 7,000 stores that are potentially going to the wall this year because of this. Ben, to his credit, has cash in the bank, can absorb this to an extent. He's got four stores.
More stores, yeah.
But we know that the vast majority of independent retailers have one store, and this is an emergency. As Ed said, this is a cliff edge.
Yeah, it's just luck of the draw, isn't it? It's not about business skill when your energy contract came up for renewal. It's just that some people found themselves in a contract which maybe they signed in 2020 for 5 years, in which case they're probably going to be all right, certainly in the short term. But yeah, those bills came up for those people at that time. And as Ben says there, those energy costs just blow the economics of running a store out of the water. And it's a point, you did a lot of media last week, as well as I did, Chris. We, all sorts of coverage we were getting. I think we got the point across, hopefully, reasonably well, that sort of increase, as I say, it's not incremental. It's not a case of, how can I make adjustments? How can I make a saving? How can I make an investment? How can I cut back a few hours? Forget it. It's just the model just does not work with those sorts of energy costs. And it was those businesses that needed support. And it's just extremely disappointing that that's not come through in the budget.
Yeah. And the most frustrating thing is we've spoken to Treasury, we've spoken to the Department for Business, and we've told them in very clear terms that if a store closes as a result of this, that is a net loss to them. And what's really frustrating is we've seen when this policy was announced, they said, okay, we've got a cap of around £5.5 billion that we can spend on this measure. That's what we've allocated for this. The latest documents released today say they're spending £545 million on this in total. That's one-tenth. I think the question that has to be asked of the government is, where's the money? Where's the money going? Because, you know, £10,000-£15,000 for a convenience store, no, it's not going to cover the whole of the energy cost, but it might keep them open. It might keep them, you know, rolling along. This just feels like a complete abdication of responsibility from the government. And if anything, just ignoring the problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as the wholesale energy prices come down, thankfully, over the for those who are renewing now, they're in a slightly better position than they were if they're doing that sort of 9 months ago. Still not great, by the way, by historical standards, but in a slightly better position. But as those wholesale prices have come down, essentially the government's just banked the difference. They just said, well, we're not, you know, we can save this money, so we'll just bank that. And we've all dealt with this for quite a long time. I don't know how our collective experience is in these roles, but you know, we've dealt with a lot of budgets between us, and what people hopefully recognise is we don't go around every year saying here are hundreds of stores or thousands of stores going to close down. That's really not what we try. You know, we just don't think it's a credible thing to say. But as I say, you cannot do the maths related to stores in that situation and not conclude that some of them are going to close down, and with all the consequential knock-ons.
And I think we can put in context, the government had more options they could have worked with here. We were not saying necessarily you had to have more money, although we would have wanted more money support. It was about taking an existing pot and targeting it better at the businesses that needed it more. So this wasn't for all businesses, targeting those that need the help. Or there's the cost-free option for the Treasury and the Department for Business to say, well, actually, this is about energy suppliers, and saying, well, the wholesale cost of energy has dropped. Allow those businesses that negotiated last year to look again at those contracts, not universally exit them, not get rid of contract law, just extend them so that the contracts last for longer, but they reflect a lower wholesale cost, which is now available to everyone, and it's given the government the fiscal headroom to do a lot of the other things they did in the budget today.
There's nothing more frustrating to me. Sorry, I'm bordering on a rant here, aren't I? But there's nothing more frustrating to me than when I hear government effectively say, oh, it's too difficult. I mean, when they, in September, October last year into November, they were consulting on how do we target energy support in the right way, at the right industries, the right businesses. And effectively, they just said, we can't find a way to target this effectively. It's too difficult.
This is the perfect example of you have literally one job.
Yeah.
Like, this is your job. This is what you're supposed to do. And let's not even get started on Ofgem. And I mean, there's so many reviews coming out of Ofgem at the moment because they've been exposed for basically not doing their job properly.
They've
failed to regulate the market properly, and now we are where we are. And I can sort of get it if it was a response to us doing what trade associations do sometimes and say, oh, costs are going up, this is really bad. But this is a very specific situation for a very specific period of time that, as Ed said, can go away with a cost neutral or zero cost measure, an intervention that just says, look, we realise that this is something that doesn't happen very often, and we need to get businesses out of it. But what we're seeing now is potentially jobs, stores, investment, all of that gone down the toilet. So, very, very frustrating.
I think that the government wants to get away from business subsidies, and I get that. I understand why that's not a sustainable position long term. We've had a long period of attack with COVID and the furlough scheme and now energy bills, but this is such a specific we're talking about, like you say, and that's the real frustration. It always gets me when the government effectively says, oh, too difficult. There are plenty of things our members find difficult, things that government tells them to do that they find difficult. I mean, I don't think this is the subject of this debate. You know, a deposit return scheme, that's really difficult, very difficult for the industry to implement. We don't have the choice to say, oh, you know what, just too difficult, couldn't make it work, we're not going to bother to do it. No, you have to, we have to do lots of difficult things the government tells us to.
Yeah. And it's difficult to get enough people in on a shift every day.
For sure, absolutely.
And we'll cover some of that a little bit later and some of the things that have been mentioned. But yeah, just the idea of targeting being too problematic is, I'm sorry, I don't
yeah, can't buy it.
We probably should cover some of the things that were actually announced, given that we're supposed to be talking about the budget itself. And one of these things that was announced was new investment zones, new capital expensing for businesses. This is replacing the existing super deduction. The thoughts from both of you about what this means, what the super deduction meant previously, and how beneficial this could be for those that, one, are still open, and two, have the capacity to invest in their future long term.
Well, I think it's good news broadly that the government are recognising there's a challenge with investment in the UK economy, and they're trying to deliver that through obviously removing the super deduction and putting in this new policy for writing down full expensing of business costs in the future. That is good news because it does mean you can write off those costs against your profit. So that does incentivise people to invest. That is really positive. Of course, it comes alongside an increase in corporation tax for those businesses paying corporation tax as well. So it is a balancing act, but broadly welcome in terms of incentivising investment, because businesses do need to think about now what they need to invest in, whether it's new refrigeration, whether it's new systems to be able to be more energy efficient to manage those higher costs going forward. So good news.
And surely energy efficiency is going to be the number one thing for businesses now. I mean, people will have to be invested in either energy generation or, you know, just really, really reducing their energy exposure. Because if we get into a situation like this again, I mean, who knows what could happen?
Yeah. Well, and already, you know, we're at a point where hopefully the wholesale energy market has leveled off a bit from its peak, but prices are still double what they would have been to 15 months ago.
We're still changing the model of how we're still changing the model,
That's going to be really tough, and that might cause some huge problems for some retailers. But it's obviously the ones at the peak. Yeah, I mean, look, we always talk about investment. We do investment tracker. We talk about how one of the great things about our sector is that because we have our reach into loads of communities and all sorts of locations, that the investments we make are spread throughout the country. And actually, that's one thing when you talk about investment zones that was really interesting, a bit disappointing that, you know, we still seem to be at a very top line regional level about where the investment zones are going to be. I was my ears pricked up. I think, I wonder, more a personal interest, where are those zones going to be? And it was still very broad. Sort of everywhere, Scotland, the northeast. Well, yeah. Okay. But I mean, where? So we're still a long way from redefining those points. But what's interesting is that when we talk to consumers, we did this middle of last year about where they would want that levelling up, was used quite a lot today, where levelling up money should be directed, where that's most effective. What customers say is it's close to where I live. It's in the communities close to where I live. That's what has the most impact. And that's where our members operate. So hopefully that levelling up support and investment and incentives can get down to that level. Anything which incentivizes investment, we think it's a good thing. I think you're right, energy efficiency is going to be the main area that's going to go. And of course, corporation tax going up, there's now more of an incentive to benefit from those deductions and full expensing. So I can't argue against anything's being done to promote investment, and we're always going to want more in that area.
And the indication from the Chancellor was that this is for an initial 3-year period, but then potentially for the very, very long term. The ambition is to make this permanent. Yeah. So, yeah, potentially a good sign there. Other measures that were announced in the budget focus on duty rates. We saw fuel duty frozen for another 12 months. I don't think we've got a huge amount to say about that. I mean, obviously positive, keeping the levels of fuel about the same. Good for customers, good for, I guess, delivery costs as well, I guess, from that side of things. But alcohol and tobacco duties to rise, with the exception of the Patriots pints levy or whatever it might be, the Brexit.
Draft duty, is that what it's called?
Draft duty, yeah.
Draft duty.
This is basically where we've got kegs, barrels, that there's a lower rate applying to them. It worries me a bit that this is now becoming a greater differential. I mean, it seems to me at the level it was at before, it's slightly sort of symbolic that there'd be a different rate for kegs out of which you would buy beer in a pub compared to in a shop. But, you know, if it becomes that much differentiated, we have got to ask the question about competition and fairness in that. And especially as one of the things that the government are looking at is whether there should be any extension and greater provision for pubs being able to sell, if you like, as off trade. So you might sell the milk bottles of a couple of pints that you pull out. No, problem with that as a whole.
In filming with some retailers over the last couple of weeks, two of the retailers I've been in do have a draw. I don't know what they're called.
A hand pump.
Behind the till, which they started during the pandemic for people to come in and get a few of those. So I mean, slight impact, but
yeah. Well, I think it's a good thing, by the way. It's a good thing if pubs can sell to off trade. Maybe some members disagree with that. Maybe they wouldn't like to have that as a potential extra competition in their location. But I think it's good if they can do that. I think it's good if shops can have some sales of on trade as well. I think that's just good for communities and good for business. But it's got to be done on a reasonably even basis. And it worries me if that differential becomes too great, then we're disrupting that competition. And I think we've got to think that through quite carefully.
Yeah. And then the other thing on duty rates, tobacco duty rates going up by more than they had trailed. Obviously, RPR quite high at the moment anyway. Ed, I did a control F search on the document for enforcement. Didn't see anything. What impact does these juice rates going up have on where people get those kind of products?
It does have an impact. We do see that sort of the illicit market increases as those duty rates increase. And of course, RPI inflation running like 12% plus for hand rolling tobacco in particular going up plus 6% on top of that. So it's a big increase. So it draws into sharp focus the need for more enforcement activity, the requirement for trading standards officers to get out there and try and tackle those businesses that are engaging in that trade or others in the community. So it is a really important area that we're still pushing the government on, and hopefully we'll get something of a tobacco control strategy in the next 2 weeks. We might see more on that, but nothing in the budget today. And it's absolutely key that that's about funding and resources for those teams to be able to do their job properly.
Yeah, absolutely right. So let's cover, I guess, the other main area that was a focus of Jeremy Hunt's budget, one of the E's, about basically getting more help for those that are out of work, that are planning to return to work. So we saw trail of new childcare reforms that will start coming on stream from next April, and a new returnership. Returnership.
Yeah, so that's going to be as one of the new words in the
As a big fan of portmanteaus, how's this one for you?
Wow. Yeah. It's an odd word, isn't it? Whenever you write it, as I've now done a few times, it looks very, very odd. I think that the approach in this is actually really encouraging for our sector. We know from our local shop report, our colleague survey, that we employ people across a full range of age groups. First experience of work for people is paper round, and then working in the shop, you know, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, and then, you know, through into alongside study, through into the main part of your career, perhaps returning to work after having family, and as your family grows up. And then in semi-retirement, as people maybe want to. And the reason why, we offer flexible, local, secure jobs. And I think that's, encourage, this is a great place for people who maybe have left full-time work but still want to work, want to keep money coming in, want to have that social interaction. The local shop, the convenience store, is a brilliant place to work that really ticks all of those boxes. Anything that can help to encourage that and to bring people back into the workforce, into those sorts of stores and into our members, it's going to be a great thing. At the moment, we don't know enough about the detail of returnships. Sure. We'll certainly be talking to members about how we can encourage their use. And if there are incentives and support for colleagues and for businesses, then that's something we should embrace.
Yeah. And I guess availability of colleagues that we talked about at the top of the programme was what a big issue for you says, but also about pay and just general employment costs. We've got the low pay commission moving towards 2/3 of median earnings next year. I don't think we've got really much of a sense of what happens beyond that. Is that right?
No, not at this stage. We were expecting usually around this time the Low Pay Commission to have their new terms of reference about what they do for the future of national living wage for the year ahead. It hasn't been released today. We expect it very shortly, but there's a bigger debate now about how wage rates are going to be set in the future, whether they should be set on these political targets, 2/3 of median earnings, or whether we go back to this sort of objective analysis of the economic circumstances and base it on those and, of course, the views of other stakeholders as well. So a further debate to come on that. I think it's going to be a big one, particularly in the lead up to the election.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could very easily see this being a manifesto battle.
For sure. And that's not necessarily good for us. No. And it becomes a sort of auction about what's the highest number someone can quote before an election. And Ed's absolutely right. This is actually a really crucial time we're heading into, because the government's policy has been 2/3 of median earnings by 2024. That will be the national living wage, compulsory national living wage. And that's what we're heading towards. So that's currently projected to be £11.08 next year, I believe, 2024. It may be higher or lower, depending on what happens to median earnings. But we know it's going to be somewhere around that. Beyond that, we don't know. And as Ed says, do they stick to that target? Do they let it float? And the Low Pay Commission decides every year. Do they set another target, which one presumes might be higher than 2/3 of median earnings, and to move towards that? And I think you're right, in the election cycle, for employers who want to pay a fair wage and who I think, you know, welcome that there are standards and there's a baseline in place, when you start to get up above the wages currently being paid now, on top of energy costs, on top of all the other regulatory costs, deposit return scheme, and all the other things we could talk about, we're not going into today, you know, it is becoming harder and harder to run a convenience store profitably. And I think that the low-pay commissions next utterances, which you can probably expect quite soon, will be really interesting. And then what we hear from government and the opposition are probably going to be a big priority for us over the next year or two.
Yeah. So those are the main things that we picked out from the budget. There's a bit more detail in the briefing that if you're an ACS member, you will find in your inbox. The only other thing to leave you with is Jeremy Hunt sort of ruined one of our sessions at conference on April the 25th. We had planned to be talking about recession-proofing your business in the first session, and Jeremy Hunt said that we are avoiding a technical recession. But I think in pretty much all other ways, we are feeling the pinch. So still very much relevant, and we look forward to seeing as many of you there as possible. Two sessions, recession-proofing your business, future-proofing your business, some great tips from independent retailers, and some leading speakers. PwC we've got Natalie Berg, who's a contributor, author, great speakers, leaders in this inner sector. So please go to acs.org.uk and make sure you book your place, because really gonna be a great event on the 25th of April. And that is it for this episode of the podcast. Please remember to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook at ACS_localshops.